The following is a paid program on this station.
The views expressed on this program are not necessarily the views of this station. Content is for educational purposes only. Consult a financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence if investing. Calls are pre-screened and the show was pre-recorded earlier this week. Rick is with Edelman Financial Engines, a part of Financial Engines Advisors, LLC, and the investment advisor that furnishes this program. Barron's has ranked Edelman Financial Services as the number one independent advisory firm in the nation based on assets managed, team size, experience, and regulatory record. Firms self-nominate. Investor returns and experience are not considered. Edelman combined with Financial Engines Advisors in November 2018.
This is the Rick Edelman Show. Edelman Financial Engines is the number one ranked investment advisor in the country by Barron's. Now, here's Rick Edelman.
A very happy summertime weekend to you. Welcome to the Rick Edelman Show. Thanks for joining me here on the program. Big news this week, Equifax. We also have some news about ESG, environmental social governance investing, you know, putting your money where your values are. We're going to talk about all of that. And your personal experience, to what degree do they influence your investment decisions? All that plus lots of your phone calls here on the Rick Edelman Show this weekend. 888-PLAN-RICK is our telephone number. If you've got questions about your personal finances, investments, taxes, mortgages, insurance, college planning, retirement planning, buying houses, leasing cars, getting out of debt, you name it, we'll cover it. At 888-752-6742 to talk to my colleagues or me anytime during the week that you like. The big news this week, of course, is Equifax. You recall that about 2 years ago, Equifax announced that they got breached and their data was hacked. 150 million Americans. Yeah, 150 million Americans had their personal information stolen. Nobody sure who the thieves were. Some argue that they were crooks who are going to, you know, buy stuff on Amazon in your name. Others argue that they're foreign governments trying to do what foreign governments do in a spying game. Who knows? Well, I'm not sure we'll ever find out. Bottom line is this. Equifax is a more serious breach than any of the others because this is Equifax. This is the credit reporting bureau. They have everything about you. Not just your name, address, date of birth, social security number. That's pretty much by so many folks all over the place. They have all of your financial transactions. They've got all of your bank account numbers, your credit card numbers, in many cases, your investment account numbers. They've got all kinds of data, and all of it got hacked. Well, they've now settled with the FTC, 48 states and the District of Columbia, plus Puerto Rico, and the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Equifax is going to pay nearly $700 million. And oh, by the way, $425 million will be restitution, which means if you were harmed as a result of this breach, you will get reimbursed. Equifax will pay for credit monitoring as well as out-of-pocket losses related to the breach. You've got to file a claim. Don't do it yet. The claims process hasn't yet begun. I will tell you when it starts, most likely this fall. And you can either tell them that you had out-of-pocket losses, or you have a couple of choices. You can request a $125 cash payment. That's what apparently Equifax and the negotiators feel your data is worth, $125. Or they'll give you 10 years of free credit monitoring. Oh, by the way, you can get up to $20,000 in reimbursement, but only as a reimbursement of expenses you actually paid out as a result of the breach. For example, did you lose money from unauthorized charges to your accounts? Did you incur costs in freezing or unfreezing your credit report? Did you incur costs in signing up for credit monitoring? Did you incur costs for lawyers and accountants to help you deal with your privacy thefts? Did you incur other expenses like notary fees, document shipping fees, postage, mileage, phone charges? Did you spend time working on all this? You can be compensated up to 20 hours at $25 an hour. All told, up to $20,000 you can get back.
Wow, that's great. That's just great.
Yeah, good luck with that. The amount of paperwork you would have to file to prove that your data was misused, and specifically misused due to the Equifax breach, as opposed to somebody else's breach. You've got to have a paper trail. You got to show any lost funds weren't reimbursed by a bank or credit card company. You got to be able to show the time you spent. Bottom line is, I think a lot of Americans aren't going to bother attempting to collect any reimbursement And many of those who do are going to get a lousy $125. Meanwhile, on a little bit of a happier note, I'm not sure if it's happier or not, but there's a big conversation we've had on the radio show here in the past month or so about ESG. This is an investment conversation. I want to ask you the simple question. Do you believe in investing in a manner consistent with your values? I think most folks would agree with that. I mean, there are a lot of folks who say, I don't want to invest in tobacco stocks or in alcohol stocks. I don't want to invest in companies that manufacture nuclear power plants. I don't want to invest in gun manufacturers. I don't want to invest in casinos, that kind of thing, right? That's okay. It's understandable that you might feel that way. But you need to recognize that when you attempt to implement an investment strategy consistent with your beliefs, you'll discover it's far more difficult to do than you thought. You are likely to be disappointed in the outcome. In fact, Hester Pierce takes it a step further. She is one of the five commissioners on the SEC, and she spoke at the American Enterprise Institute this past week, and she said that corporations are being unfairly maligned by proponents of ESG. That's the movement behind this socially responsible investing. ESG refers to environmental, social, and governance policies. She said at her speech, quote, "We see labeling based on incomplete information, public shaming, and shunning wrapped in moral rhetoric, preached with cold-hearted, self-righteous oblivion to the consequences. We pin scarlet letters on allegedly offending corporations without bothering much about facts and circumstances, and seemingly without caring about the unwarranted harm. After all, naming and shaming corporate villains is fun, trendy, and profitable." That's Hester Pierce, SEC Commissioner, noting that when you attempt to make an investment decision based on non-investment criteria, you're more likely going to hurt yourself. But it's popular and easy to do. One illustration is at Harvard. Harvard has a $39 billion endowment, the largest of all colleges. Harvard still invests in companies that produce fossil fuels. You know, they invest in ExxonMobil and in BP and in other oil companies. But recently, 300 faculty members signed a petition calling on Harvard's endowment fund to divest its investment in those oil companies. Students held a rally. Alumni have written to Harvard's president urging the university to divest. Well, are we sure that divesting is going to improve the returns of Harvard's endowment? Is it going to lower the risks of Harvard's endowment? Is it going to cause ExxonMobil to change its corporate policies or its behavior? Hester Pierce of the SEC suggests probably not. And here's the worst part. Let's say that you're running a mutual fund company and you're struggling with poor returns and you're not attracting enough money from investors for your fund to operate profitably. What do you do about that if you're a fund manager? Well, you know what a lot of them are doing? They are rebranding themselves as ESG funds. They are announcing that they are now suddenly investing with a socially conscious approach. Last year, the number of mutual funds that placed themselves in the ESG category grew 50%. There's now nearly 400 of them in the country. And yet, a lot of these funds haven't changed a thing about the stocks they invest in. According to a recent study that just came out, some fund managers simply changed the wording in their prospectus. They didn't do anything about the funds themselves. Last year, for example, 62 mutual funds added ESG criteria to their prospectus. But of the 62, only 11 of them actually changed the investments that they hold. Goldman Sachs International Equity Fund got a new name, the Goldman Sachs International Equity ESG Fund. The Putnam Multi-Cap Growth Fund is now the Putnam Sustainable Leaders Fund. And the Putnam Multi-Cap Value Fund is now the Putnam Sustainable Future Fund. They're not the only fund companies to have done this. Aberdeen, JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, they've all added ESG to the prospectuses of many of their funds without actually changing anything that the funds are actually investing in.
You've got to be kidding me.
In other words, they're betting that investors will judge the books by their covers. So if, in fact, you truly want to invest in a manner consistent with your views on ESG, environment, social, and governance, you need to do some research beyond just the name that the fund gives itself and the language that's embedded in the prospectus. Look at the portfolio holdings and see if, in fact, they've changed over the past year or two. See if, in fact, the holdings in the fund are truly consistent with how you believe. And I suspect you're going to discover that it just is a sham. And our job here is to protect you from nonsense like that. That's what we do with our investment research. And let us apply our efforts to you. We do this for thousands of folks all across the country, and we're happy to do it for you as well. Call us here at Edelman Financial Engines at 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-752-6742. When we come back, long short funds. If you can't make up your mind about how to invest, this wacky idea might be for you.
Named by Talkers Magazine as one of the Heavy 100 talk show hosts in America, this is The Rick Edelman Show.
Welcome back to the program. Rick Edelman here, 888-PLAN-RICK, online at ricedelman.com. So, you're investing in the stock market. Well, let's think about that. Do you believe that the stock market is going to go up or down? Well, wait a minute. That's a trick question, because I just referred to the stock market in the singular. But the stock market actually consists of 7,000 stocks all around the world. I mean, the S&P 500 has 500 stocks in that one index. The Dow Jones Industrial Average has 30 stocks in that index. So it's really a misnomer to say the stock market is, when we should be saying the stock market are, right? Because some stocks are going up while others are going down. So wouldn't it be cool to invest not just in the stock market generally, but to invest in the stock market specifically, meaning you'll buy stocks that go up and you'll short stocks that go down. Oh, wait. Short stocks? What am I talking about? Did you know you can make a bet? You can try to obtain a profit by predicting that a stock will go down in value, not merely that it will go up in value. See, most folks, when they think about stock investing, they're trying to pick stocks that they believe are going to rise in value. But what if you're pretty confident that there's a stock that is going to fall in value? Wouldn't it be cool to make a profit on the decline? That's called shorting. And here's how it works. Let's say that there's stock ABC, I'm making up that name, and you're highly confident that this stock is going to fall in value. Well, but if you owned it, you'd be selling it, but you don't own it. So does that mean there's nothing you can do about it? Not at all. Here's what you do. You go to someone who does own the stock, and you borrow their shares, and then you sell them. Later, when the stock falls, you buy back the shares at the new lower price, and you return them to the fella you borrowed them from. Might sound a little complicated, but Wall Street is happy to accommodate you on this request anytime. You can go to any brokerage firm and tell them that you would like to engage in shorting, and they will set up the account for you, and you just say to them, I want to sell a stock I don't own. They'll arrange for the borrowing of the shares, letting you sell them. Later, you'll have to reimburse the account by buying back those shares. Now, here's the problem. If you're wrong, if those stocks rise in value instead of fall in value, you could lose a lot of money. In fact, the potential loss is unlimited, because if the stock keeps on rising, your losses keep on growing. It's literally the exact opposite of ordinary investing. That's why we don't normally recommend shorting for individual consumers. But wait, there's more. Some mutual funds will do it for you. there are some mutual funds out there that call themselves long short, meaning they both buy stocks they think will rise and they short stocks they think will fall. And this wacky idea actually has the interest of some investors. So you need to know the truth. In a recent report, taking a look at all of the long short funds that are out there, over the last 12 months through June 30th, they gained 1.1% in value. Over the last 5 years, they gained 2.8% per year. In other words, they severely underperformed the overall market indexes. So if you're thinking you're going to be able to make a big profit, well, they haven't been able to deliver it in the past 1 year or the past 5 years. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Who knows what will happen in the future? But here's one thing that is a big problem for them. Their average cost is 2.2% per year. That's more than twice the average mutual fund's annual expenses. In other words, it costs a lot of money to engage in this strategy, and those expenses are so high, that's one contributing factor to why their performance might be so bad. So before you try to get clever and creative with your investment strategy, remember that the tortoise is the one that wins the race. Slow and steady, dull and boring, bread and butter, as opposed to trying to get in what's hot and short out of what's not. By the way, there's something else going on in the world of investing that I want to ask you about related to this. What is it that causes you to make the decisions you make regarding investment risk? There's a study that just came out of Copenhagen Business School and the Hong Kong University of Science and Technology. They found in a study of investors, they were trying to ask the question, what makes individuals shy away from investment risk? And they took a look at thousands of investors over a number of years, and they looked at their experiences involving investment losses. And they put everybody into three categories. First-hand experiences, where you personally lost money. Second-hand experiences, where a member of your family lost money. And third-hand experiences where banks in their area defaulted. So which of these three types of experiences impacted the investor's investment behavior? Well, I think you know the answer to this question. It's the first-hand experiences. In other words, if you've lost money in your investments, you have now become risk-averse. But if you watched your brother lose money, if you've watched your parents lose money, their investment experiences did not change your view at all. The magnitude of secondhand and thirdhand impact was substantially smaller, according to the research. And that's the message I'm trying to share with you. You are engaging in a series of situations in your life that I'm willing to bet you've never experienced before. You've never been this age before. You've never been in your financial situation that you're in today before. You've never had the attitude or outlook that you've had before. And as a result of this, most of what you're doing in the investment world is new to you. When you send kids to college, it's the first time you ever did it. When you get a daughter married, it's the first time you did it. When you bought a house, it was the first time you did it. As you near retirement, it's the first time you're doing it. As you get into retirement, first time you do it. When you begin to take Social Security benefits, first time you do it. And so we tend to ascribe so much to our own personal experience. And the problem is, that personal experience is a very expensive school teacher. Wouldn't it be easier to learn from the experiences of others, to look at people who have sent kids to college and look at how they handled it, to look at folks who are already in retirement and see what life is for them, look at folks who are already where you are going? Unfortunately, that's not what people do. And because we tend to overemphasize our own experiences, we tend to set ourselves up for failures, for errors, for mistakes, for losses, for costs, for taxes, for fees, for risks that we otherwise could have avoided had we just paid attention to the benefits of learning from other people's experiences. That's what we offer you here at Edelman Financial Engines. Taking our cumulative advice and experience over the past 3 decades, serving tens of thousands of people all across the country, managing over $200 billion in assets, we can apply those experiences to you to help you avoid costly mistakes. Call us. Take advantage of this at 888-PLAN-RICK. Online, it's at ricedelman.com.
With the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Truth About Your Future, coming up on The Rick Edelman Show.
We're taking telephone calls here on The Rick Edelman Show off to Framingham, Massachusetts. Barry's with us on the program. How you doing, Barry?
I'm fine, Rick. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you so much. How can I help?
Great. Well, thanks for taking my call, first off, and I just want to say I'm a long-term listener, and I really appreciate everything you do. I really learned a lot by listening to your show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And what can I do for you today?
Well, so I'm calling because my wife recently started a new job, and she's eligible for a 403B plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking into it, and I guess the sponsor is TIAA Cref.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only like 10 options for her to invest in, and they're all annuities, a mixture of either variable or fixed annuities.
Yeah.
And I'm used to using low-cost index funds to invest, so I'm wondering if it's worth putting money into this 403B or if I should just take that money I would have invested there and put it into our brokerage account.
Does your wife's employer provide a matching contribution?
No, they do not.
Oh, that stinks. Okay, so here's the deal. I'm going to tell you that if you want to do what you just described, I won't object. And that's very unusual for me to say that regarding the topic we're discussing here. So let me bring everyone up to speed. When you work for an employer, they often offer a retirement plan. If you work in the for-profit world, the retirement plan most commonly is a 401k plan. But in the nonprofit world, school systems, hospitals, as well as charities, they don't use a 401k. They use a 403B, which is, so your wife's working for who? Hospital, school system?
School system.
School system. So very common. And TIAA CREF is the largest provider of 403Bs in the industry. And they were doing this, quite frankly, long before 401Ks came onto the landscape. TIAA, the letter I in TIAA is insurance. TIAA stands for Teachers Insurance Annuity Association of America. And so we have to recognize that, yes, they are annuity products. Now, back in the 1950s and 60s and even into the 70s, there were no other options. So, okay, you grin and bear it. But then the world of mutual funds came up. And so Congress amended the law, creating something called 403B7, which allows these nonprofits to introduce mutual funds into their retirement plans, not limiting them to annuity products. And that's when TIAA created CREF, the College Retirement Equities Fund. And the CREF products are, in fact, mutual funds. And so if your wife's school system offers the CREF side of the equation, there will be mutual funds available there. But if they don't, if they're still using the 403B version rather than the 403B7, then you're right. There's nothing available other than annuity products. And these annuity products generally are very expensive. They generally underperform the markets because, by definition, annuity products are more conservative. So while we're on the subject of TIAA CREF, let me tell you one of my frequent rants about this. Say that you put your money into CREF using their mutual funds, and you do that, and these are investing in the stock market, for example, and you're happily doing that for the course of your career. You're nearing retirement, and you want to reduce your investment risk. So you transfer the money from CREF over to TIAA, getting the money out of the stock market and into one of the annuities. This way, your attitude is, I'm reducing my risk and I don't have to worry about the stock market crashing, etc. Great, except for one problem. What you might not realize, because what TIAA CREF might not tell you, is that when the money was in CREF, you had full liquidity capabilities of your money. But when you transfer it over to TIAA, which is an irreversible decision, by the way, you're limited to making withdrawals of no more than 10% per year of the value of the account. You've given up liquidity on 90% of the money you've been saving for your whole career. And too often, people who deal with TIAA CREF don't know that they've just made a one-way trip out of CREF and into TIAA. Since there's no matching contribution by the employer, you're asking the right question. Should my wife put money into an account that is expensive and underperforming when the only benefit of doing so is a tax deduction, when I can instead just invest on an after-tax basis into alternative investments that in the long run have better tax treatment because of capital gains rates and the better opportunity or potential for returns? So you're not crazy to be thinking that way. In fact, we might even take it a step further and you can have your cake and eat it too, to the extent that your wife is eligible to contribute to a deductible IRA. So she can do to some degree in her IRA what she would have been able to do in the 403B. And there's another thing to consider. It's possible that her employer will offer, through the 403B, a money market fund. So your wife can contribute the money to the money market fund, and then you can see if the employer will allow her to do something called an in-service distribution, where even though she's still working there, she can transfer the money from the money market fund to an IRA. So she gets the best of both worlds. She can contribute to the maximum under the rules in a 403B, which is more than you can do in an IRA, transferring the money to an IRA, enabling her to continue to enjoy the tax deferral while at the same time picking the investments that you and she want her to have.
And how often could she do an in-service transfer?
It depends. It depends on the employer. So sometimes it's once a year. Sometimes there's no limit. It really depends on the employer as to whether they allow it and the details associated with that. So talk to the employer and find out greater detail about what options are truly available in the 403B plan, whether or not there's a money market type product available, and whether or not they allow in-service distributions.
Okay, that sounds great. Thanks for the information.
You're very welcome. I'm glad you called. And there are millions of school teachers and hospital employees are suffering the same limitations as your wife, Barry, because of the antiquated rules associated with 403Bs. I don't understand why Congress hasn't updated the rules and fixed this so that people who work for nonprofits have the same investment opportunities that people who work for for-profit companies have the opportunity to do. Even federal workers have a better opportunity through the federal thrift savings plan. So it's a real shame that so many millions of school teachers and hospital employees are stuck with, frankly, what I consider to be an antiquated investment program.
Yeah, no, I was surprised at the limitations. Our other school system, she was working before, it was a 403B through Fidelity, and it was all mutual funds and index funds.
So you might want to have her talk with her HR department and try to motivate them to improving their retirement plan. And so here's what drives me nuts about it. Here at Edelman Financial Engines, we're America's largest independent provider of investment advice to employer retirement plans. Well, most of our clients are big 401k plans, but we also work with a lot of small businesses and their 401ks. And guess what? We work with a lot of 403b plans as well. We provide retirement advice to the employees of all of these companies and nonprofit organizations, school systems, hospitals, etc. We'll help you figure out how much to save, what to invest in, how you can get closer to your retirement goal. Nobody else is going to do that for you at work. Not your boss, not HR. They often don't tell you the stuff you need to know, but that's what we do. And so it really pains me, Barry, when I come upon folks who say that they're working for a nonprofit or a school system or a hospital, like your wife is, where they have retirement choices in their plan that are frankly not as good as alternative choices that are readily available. And we stand here ready to help. So encourage your wife to talk to her HR department to give us a call for our workplace division. So maybe we can help out in more ways than one.
Okay.
Barry, wish you the best of luck.
All right. Thank you so much, Rick. Have a good day.
You do the same. That's Barry from Framingham, Massachusetts. You're listening to The Rick Edelman Show, 888-PLAN-RICK. If you've got questions about whether you should participate in your retirement plan at work, how best to do so, what are your options if you're not really thrilled with the investment choices available, give us a call, 888-752-6742. I'm Rick Edelman. This is The Rick Edelman Show, 888-PLAN-RICK, online at ricedelman.com. Stay with us.
With the founder of one of the nation's largest independent investment advisory firms, coming up on The Rick Edelman Show.
Welcome back to the program. Rick Edelman here. Hey, is it possible that you might outlive your money during retirement? Join us for one of our free live events. It's called Three Keys to Retirement Planning. You'll learn about Social Security, estate planning, and investing for retirement. We're doing it pretty soon in New York, Louisville, Lexington, Charlotte, Cleveland, Portland, Melbourne, and Dallas. All these events are free, but spaces fill up pretty quickly, so register today. Find out our full live event schedule at rickedelman.com. Are you married? Are you over the age of 50? Well, guess what? The rate of divorce for people over the age of 50 has doubled since 1990. Recent studies have shown that people who are recently separated or divorced have higher resting blood pressure. Divorce leads to considerable weight gain, especially in men. And there are higher levels of depression, even higher than when a spouse dies. Yeah, the death of the marriage is apparently worse than the death of a spouse. Well, all these statistics and more coming from the National Center for Family and Marriage Research, they find that women who divorce after the age of 50 have a standard of living that falls by nearly half. Men, their standard of living falls by about 20%. Neither of them recover financially. Seems to make sense. If you're already 50 plus, you don't have as much time to recover financially. And you can imagine that your lifestyle is going to go down and stay down. Check this out. 27% of women who are 63 or older who divorce, 27% of them, roughly one in four, are in poverty. That's nine times the rate of married women. According to the Journal of Financial Economics, divorcing or marrying hurts the performance of hedge fund managers. Managers underperform by over 4% a year in the months following a breakup, and they continue to do poorly for up to 2 years after their divorce. So I guess that's a new set of criteria you can ask if you're choosing a money manager. How's your marriage? Because if their marriage is on the rocks, your investment might be as well. Research suggests the best way to recover from divorce is to get remarried. It takes 4 years for depression to return to earlier levels, but when you remarry, depression ends almost immediately. And of course, there's a simpler way to solve this dilemma. Don't get married in the first place. Yeah, according to researchers, they're showing that there's a marriage penalty in our tax code. 2 million couples will get married this year, and many of them, as a result, will pay more in taxes merely because they got married. Consider a couple with kids, both of them earning an income. They can owe thousands more for being married. For example, if you want to contribute the maximum to a Roth IRA and you earn less than $122,000, go ahead. If you get married, it doesn't double to $244,000. It's only $193,000. That's just one simple illustration of the marriage penalty. Isn't it crazy that our tax code might be influencing people with their marriage plans? We're taking telephone calls here on The Rick Edelman Show off to Las Vegas. Richard is on the phone. How you doing, Richard?
Good. Thanks for taking my call. My wife came home from one of her women's club meetings the other day with a copy of a Wall Street Journal article entitled "Congress is Coming for Your IRA" by Philip DeMuth.
Yeah.
And apparently Congress passed this in May, 417-3. It's called the Setting Every Community Up for Retirement Act, or SECURE. And they expect it to pass the Senate by unanimous consent. I haven't heard any further about it. But what it basically does is eliminates the stretch IRA, where your beneficiaries can take the money out from your IRA over the course of their lifetime. Ours are going to our nieces and nephews since we don't have any children, and they're in their 30s range, so they could take it out over 50, 60 years, which might be 1 or 2% a year. But this new act requires non-spouse beneficiaries to take all the money out within 10 years, which would greatly increase the taxes and whatnot of our beneficiaries and cause them a lot of problems. And at this point, I'm kind of thinking that a good bit of our RA money we're going to end up leaving to charities to try to prevent this. So I just wanted to know your comment. I haven't read one word about this anywhere else or heard it on the news or anything.
Well, your description of the proposal in Congress is very accurate. Good for you. You got it right. I'm very familiar with the editorial that has appeared in the Wall Street Journal. Actually, there were two of them. You mentioned Phillips' editorial. About a week after that, the Wall Street Journal itself wrote an editorial. Phillips was an op-ed piece. And the Journal editorial board came out with a very similar attitude as Phil, saying that the SECURE Act should be defeated and not made into law simply because of the elimination of this provision, the stretch IRA. I strongly disagree with these two op-ed pieces in the Wall Street Journal, so much so that I've written my own op-ed and have submitted that to the Wall Street Journal, and I'm hopeful that over the next 10 days they're going to publish it. If they don't, we're going to give it to some other newspapers and try to get somebody somewhere to publish it, and if I can't get anybody to publish it, then we're going to put it on our own website because we think it's an absurd situation. What Phillips said is that the elimination of the stretch IRA would create a taxopolis. He said it would create a catastrophe for retirement savings. That is utterly absurd. It's a wild accusation and claim that is completely unsupported by the facts. So let me explain why he's wrong and why the SECURE Act is worthy of becoming law. First, we recognize, I'm sure you'll agree, Richard, that we have a retirement security crisis in America.
Right?
We have tens of millions of Americans woefully unprepared for retirement. Part of the problem is that people don't have access to a retirement plan at work. Part of the problem is that they aren't able to save as much money as they need to. Part of the problem is that they have to withdraw money from their IRAs at a relatively young age, starting at age 70 and a half, for example. And so the SECURE Act has a wide variety of provisions that are designed to improve the situation in meaningful, material ways. Yes, there's one clause regarding the stretch IRA, as you noted. Instead of letting an heir take the money out over the course of their lifetime, stretching it over their life expectancy, they would have to take the money out over a 10-year period instead. My attitude is, so what? We have to find some way to pay for this legislation, and the reduction of the stretch IRA, not the elimination of it, but the reduction of it, the 10 years, is a simple, easy way to help pay for the bill. And here's why it matters so much. If you look at the national statistics of how many people have $1 million or more in their retirement accounts, it's about 1% of the American public. The stretch IRA only matters to 1% of the people. The average American has less than $125,000 in IRAs. If the average American has $125,000 in IRAs, which is what the Employee Benefit Research Institute says, and the average American has two children, which is what the Census Bureau says, then the average heir is going to inherit about $60,000.
Right.
They don't have the luxury of leaving that money intact, untouched, for the course of their lives. They have bills to pay. They got kids to send to college. They're trying to buy homes. They're trying to pay off debt. They're trying to start businesses. They're going to have to withdraw the money anyway. The stretch IRA is only relevant for that 1% of the U.S. population. And let's remember that the whole purpose of IRAs is to help you generate retirement income for yourself and your spouse. It's not meant to be a vehicle to provide retirement income for your heirs. This was a loophole. The stretch IRA was an accident by Congress. They wrote the original law in such a way that it created this loophole that allowed people to leave money to children, grandchildren, nieces, and nephews where they didn't have to make withdrawals for the course of their lifetime. That was not intended by Congress. It was an accident. Congress is simply closing the loophole now because it is of irrelevance to 99% of all Americans. So while it might matter to you and your nieces and nephews, I'm afraid this is going to be one case where you're going to have to say, you know what, for the greater good, I'm willing to give this one up.
Yeah. So you feel that it's likely to pass pretty much as is?
We don't know yet. It is being debated in the Senate. It's possible that it's going to go back to committee where there might be some additional amendments or changes to the legislation. So we don't know what the status of the legislation is. If and when the bill does become law, I'll come back here on the air with complete information on the features of the law and how you can make best advantage of them for your own personal situation.
Well, that'd be good. I just couldn't believe that I hadn't read anything or seen anything on the news.
Because it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
It's a big deal to a very small number of very rich people.
Okay. I can see that now.
Yeah. So, you feel a little bit better about it?
Yeah, I do.
So. Good. Then my job here is done.
I really appreciate it, and I'll be looking for your further information on it.
Stay tuned, Richard. I'll be presenting it to you in weeks and months to come. Thanks so much.
Yep, thank you.
You got questions, challenges, issues, confusion about your aspects of personal finances? That's why we're here. Just give us a call at 888-PLAN-REC. That's 888-752-6742. Online at ricedelman.com. Thanks for joining me on the program today. Had a fabulous time. Hope you did as well. Enjoy the summertime weekend. I'm Rick Edelman. That's a wrap.
As a reward, you'll have no radio for the rest of the week. Go to your room.
See you next week.
Get the truth about money every weekend on The Rick Edelman Show.